You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is Gilbert Gottfried, and I'm here with my co-host Frank Santopadre, and this is another edition of Gilbert and Frank's amazing Colossal Obsessions. And we're talking to the man who wanted to be Sid Bernstein in Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Sandy Helberg is here.
Sandy Helberg.
Yes.
Sandy, character actor extraordinaire.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. Character actor, like I said, they told me I was too Jewish to play him. I actually...
You auditioned for Beverly Hills Cop 2 in the part of Sidney Bernstein.
That's right. And they told me I was too Jewish. And then I go see the movie, and the rabbi here is playing the part. If they're doing a new Fiddler on the Roof, if they tell me I'm too Jewish, then I will quit the business.
They really told John, who directed that picture? Oh, Martin Brest. They told you you're too Jewish.
No,
that was second.
The guy killed himself. Tony Scott.
Yeah,
Tony Scott.
Jumped off a bridge.
Nobody knows exactly what was going on with him.
Yeah.
He just took a dive and...
That was the sound he made.
When he hit the wall.
Yeah.
By the way...
Now. I heard that the part of Sidney Bernstein, maybe they would have changed the name,
right?
But they had originally asked, while he was still welcome in Hollywood, they had originally asked Roberto Benigni.
Oh, my God.
Ah,
that's weird. How is Roberto Benigni going to play Sidney Bernstein?
Yeah.
He doesn't even speak English,
Yeah.
Yiddish.
He was someone who wore out his welcome
quickly.
Too Jewish.
When he climbed over the chairs to get his Oscar, they said, this guy's
weird.
Ours.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you were so great in that part. You really made that your own.
See? This is why I keep Frank around.
Yes. He reminds you of all
I thought you had a nice Sandy Helberg quality.
Yeah.
In that part.
Yes.
By the way, you're also, speaking of Helberg Gottfried Productions, you're also both in Meet Wally Sparks.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Yes. That was a brilliant film.
Oh, it was. Nobody was directing the movie. What's his name was directing it? His friend.
Oh, the comedian.
Harry Basil.
Yes, Harry Basil.
Can't believe I know that.
But the original director was a TV director I'd worked with, Peter Baldwin.
Yeah.
And I worked with Peter Baldwin.
Yeah. And he just hired me. I didn't have to read. And I go there, and Peter's sitting in the corner on a chair reading a magazine. I said, hey, how you doing? He said, go over and talk to the director. And it was... Harry.
So one can assume that Rodney used his muscle to get the original director pushed out for his buddy.
Peter still took sole credit, which I think was a mistake. But
did Harry Basil also direct Back by Midnight?
I
think he did a Dangerfield picture or two.
I was in Back by Midnight.
I know that.
That Back by Midnight made Meet Wally Sparks look like Citizen Kane. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But no, I haven't even... I'm saying that just acting it out. I've never seen the movie. I'd be scared.
We had Ed Begley on the show. You know Ed.
Yeah.
And Ed was in it, too, and they discussed how neither of them have ever seen it.
I don't think Harry Basil has seen it. You know, I don't think he saw it when he was making it.
Good guy, Peter Baldwin, by the way. I worked on a sitcom with him. He died last year. I think we lost him.
Yeah, I worked on a couple episodes of Newhart.
Quite a resume.
Newhart with him. He started out as an actor. Yeah. He's great looking.
I wrote on a very forgettable sitcom he directed.
Which was a
Good Man. Oh,
Rodney Dangerfield is one of those people that, like, I mean, I love to see the old guys around, but boy, I wish he had retired earlier.
Yeah, you think so?
He would go on, like, the Tonight Show
right.
when Jay Leno was the host.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you know, you remember when how great he was on Carson. He would be like a mile a minute.
He didn't have any conversation.
Yeah.
Johnny said, how's your health? And he would do 20 minutes.
Yeah, you've got to take care of your health, Johnny.
He said, I'm all right now, but last week I was rough.
Oh, it was tough.
And he would come out, do a set.
Right.
And then sit down on the panel, and that was another set.
Right, right.
But then it just looked like, you know, he would come on, and it looked like he didn't, you know, just... Can he get through the sentence?
Yeah, yeah. I ran into him years ago at Musso's with Richard Lewis.
Yeah.
And I said hello to Richard and Rodney, and Rodney's eating. I said, what are you eating there? And he had a plate of herring.
Yeah.
He said, I'm eating my heritage here. And he was eating the thing, and he should have quit then.
Yeah,
right. maybe the drugs took their toll.
I think
after a while. But Sandy has had a fascinating career, Gilbert. In addition to being beaten out by you for Beverly Hills Cop,
I've been beaten by a lot of people.
He's in Spaceballs, very memorably. He's in High Anxiety, Chevy Chase's Modern Problems. He's one of the disciples in History of the World.
Wow,
with John Hurt playing Jesus, and he's in the original Gopher from the Love Boat pilot. Movie.
Oh.
Too Jewish,
yes.
After they saw me standing next to Dick Van Patten and Cloris Leachman and...
What happened? Cloris Leachman gave you a hard time?
She gave me a very hard time because she and Tom...
Bosley.
Bosley. Yeah, Tom Bosley, they played a husband and wife on The Love Boat, and I had some scenes with her, and every time they yelled cut... She'd turn around and go over to the director and point to me and say, my son is much better than he is.
Ooh.
Her son had read for the part.
God.
Every scene, he would have been so much better on that part, you know.
Ooh.
But, you know what?
That's heartbreaking because we love Cloris Leachman.
Yeah.
I do, too. I think she's a great actress. Just, it was my first job.
Yeah. That was Dick Van Patten was in the captain's role.
No, Dick Van Patten played the doctor.
Oh, he played the doctor. He was in Bernie Coppell's part.
Okay. Yes.
Right.
And the captain was an Australian guy.
An unknown actor.
An unknown, still unknown.
Yeah.
The girl is an unknown from New York.
Right.
And still unknown. Teddy Wilson, he was on
That's My Mama.
Yes, I think so. He was great.
Playing Isaac,
the bartender. Yeah. And there were other characters. There was a couple, married couple. They were the ship entertainment. It was Dick Stahl and his wife.
Richard Stahl.
Oh,
yeah, Richard Stahl.
Yes. He would always pop up on The Odd Couple.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Funny guy.
So they cut them out, you know, those characters out, the entertainment couple and... So we did a two-hour pilot. We sailed around Ensenada, and we came back, and they didn't pick up the pilot. And so I went off to do another show. A year later, they're going to do another pilot. And I was obligated to the Lorenzo and Henrietta Music Show.
Oh, you know, he worked for Lorenzo Music.
Oh, wow.
Carlton the Doorman.
Yes.
Also a terrific comedy writer.
He is. Yeah. That's what he was. He had seen The Groundlings. The next day he calls me and I answer, and it's Carlton the Doorman.
Yeah.
Hello, Sandy. Hi. I'm telling my wife Carlton is,
And he was also
Garfield for another generation.
The voice of Garfield.
So he hired me and Richard Lewis as a writer and Murphy Dunn.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of people.
Funny guys.
They were all funny guys. The show was terrible. Abominable. I got to tell you one Richard Lewis story.
Go! We had him on here.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
So he was just writing on the show at that time, and we had this guy, I think I'd mentioned him, Ira Miller, who Mel Brooks used to use all the time. Oh, no, actually, it was, I can't remember, Cliff Arquette's son.
David Arquette.
Lewis. Yes, Lewis Arquette was one of the writers.
Yeah, the father. Rosanna's father.
Richard, was nervous. So we take, Murphy and I take Richard out of the writer's room, And Arquette takes the doorknob off, and there's a hole, and he sticks his dick through the hole.
I love it already.
And so Murphy and I are bringing Richard, who's, you know, and we wouldn't let him see the door. We said, okay, here. And we said, Richard, just open the door. And he grabs his dick and looks at it and runs screaming into the bathroom and stands there for 10 minutes with boiling water. His hands were swollen.
Whose dick was
red.
It
was Arquette.
Louis Arquette's
dick. Louis Arquette's dick, yes.
From Blue.
Louis, I mean, that's
from the
what
Waltons.
We did. Yes, we entertained ourselves. The show sucked, but we had a. We did sketches like Police Blimp. We were two cops up in a blimp.
And I love
then,
it.
And then we would have these high speed chases. And we're going.
Funny premise.
It was. They paid a fortune for the blimp. They used it twice, and I think Lorenzo was buried
hilarious.
In it.
Hilarious. Now, Gilbert will appreciate this, Sandy. We talked on the phone, and this is fun. His first movie, Gilbert, Sandy's first movie, co-starred John Carradine, and who else?
Broderick Crawford.
And who else?
Elsa Lanchester.
Elsa Lanchester.
Jeez.
Louis Hayward.
Yep.
Patrick Knowles.
You know these names?
Yes. Yeah. Patrick Knowles was in The Wolfman.
Yes. Correct.
Patrick Knowles. Who else? Lanchester, Louis Hayward. Yeah. So I started out working for the company as a PA. So they were doing these really bad B horror movies. And I begged the producer, let me just, I just want to get my SAG card. So that was the first movie I acted in. But as the PA, I hung out on the set, and Broderick Crawford would show. Oh, Ray Milland! Did we say?
Oh, Ray Milland!
Ray Milland!
Oh, so bury the lead.
Broderick Crawford showed up shit-faced every day to work. Every and Ray Milland was the ultimate professional.
Right.
He didn't.
In spite
like
of winning an Oscar
for playing a drunk.
Right.
And so he'd be waiting, Ray Milland, and they'd bring Broderick Crawford, and he couldn't walk sometimes, and his face was bruised. So they wanted to get the scene to get Ray Milland out, and he can't stand up. So Broderick Crawford, he had a cane, his character, so they propped him up on the cane and sort of leaned him on it, and he just was leaning on the cane. They yell action. He opens his mouth. The cane slips. And Broderick Crawford is falling for like three sound stages.
Oh,
he just doesn't fall down. You know, he's knocking sets down. Four grips are following him. And finally, like outside of the sound stage, he goes down with five guys.
Fantastic.
And they said, send him home. So then as the PA, when the movie was over, I had to take him to Universal to do a radio interview. And I pick him up, and he was living in a motel off of on Vine off of Melrose. And I go up, and he's got five empty gin bottles, like the milkman, outside the door.
Incredible.
I knock on the door, and it's pitch. I mean, so black, it took the vision out of my eye. You know, I'd never seen anything so dark. And he's like, I had a Fiat, which was this big. And he comes down the stairs, and I literally had to stuff him in the car and get in the car.
Wow.
And he's breathing, and the windows are steamed up. And he's like, he was talking, not to me, but he was talking to someone.
Stuffing a drunk Broderick Crawford into a Fiat.
We got to Universal. He did the interview perfectly. Like, you know.
Wow.
Sober. Then the interview's over, and then he's shit-faced again. Let's stop for a drink on the way back to the motel. Sure, whatever you want, Brod. And he said if I ever had any scenes I wanted to rehearse, I should call him, you know. And
how about that?
I didn't.
You babysat for a bombed Broderick Crawford.
Yeah.
I once read an interview with this guy who directed a movie called Big House USA. That was a prison breakout movie. And he said that the cast was Broderick Crawford, Lon Chaney Jr.,
right,
and Ralph Meeker. And he goes, I don't want to tell you the drinking going on.
I can imagine. And Chaney Jr. took a backseat to no one.
Oh,
as far as the boozing.
Oh, man. Well, he, you know, he. Did you ever see his movie where he played J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah, Larry Cohen.
Yes.
Movies.
Right.
Yeah, we had Larry Cohen on the show.
J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was in his day a terrific actor.
Yeah. We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
What was that crazy thing you told me about Carradine and Bogart?
Oh, John Carradine was also in this same movie. That with Ray Milland. And
yeah.
So again, I would say.
What was it called? The Terror of the Wax Museum?
Terror in the Wax Museum.
The Wax Museum.
They hired all these mimes to play wax figures.
Oh, jeez.
And so these shots were always quick because you don't want to see a guy go like this.
Yeah, or blink.
So I would sit there and I would talk to. And John Carradine, who was very arthritic. You know,
yeah.
So he's telling me stories. He was like the first one to get into sailing. He had a big sailboat, and he says he got everyone, Bogart into sailing and Dick Powell. And so during World War II, I had a friend also whose father was Dick Powell and his mother was Joan Blondell.
Wow.
Jeez.
And so they had what they called the Newport Navy. And all those guys, Bogart and Dick Powell, and they'd go out in their boats at night and sail along the coast, making sure the Japanese do not invade Newport Beach.
Started their own navy.
And they're all shit-faced, and they're shooting guns. And he said as a kid, my friend, he would see just guns going off, you know, and they were just kept shooting out towards the ocean to make sure. And my friend, who was Dick Powell's, he was on a yacht with his father, mother, Bogart, and Lauren Bacall.
Wow.
And he was a teenager, and he was staring at Lauren Bacall's ass. And she turned around and looked at him. She said, "Did you get enough?" You know, and he turned red, and he was so embarrassed, and, you know, but he grew up, you know, in the golden era, and he became a producer,
sure.
You know.
Did you interact much with Elsa Lanchester and Carradine?
Yeah, we used to go out and we would have a threesome.
Great.
You know, John's fingers were so crooked, sometimes it felt okay.
Not bad.
No, it was okay. No, I could go to lunch with him. Now, they just would work, and there was also a very famous Japanese actress, I can't remember.
Okay.
There was nobody under 70 in that movie.
Right.
You know, except
and you were
me.
A kid.
I was a kid. I played an English newspaper guy.
I love that.
And so... Yeah, it was amazing. But at that time, also at Paramount, when I was there as a PA, they were shooting Godfather 2 and Chinatown, and I had my bike, and I'd go from soundstage to soundstage.
Good time to be there.
It was. And Frank Sinatra did his comeback special at Paramount.
Oh.
And it was on the stage across from where I had my little office, security all over, but I'd been there, so I went in the Happy Day soundstage and worked my way into the Frank Sinatra soundstage.
Love it.
He and Gene Kelly are singing and dancing, and they're doing The Lady is a Tramp. And so Gene Kelly's dancing, and Frank is singing, and Frank goes, he says, "Are there any ladies here?" "No, no lady." "That's why the lady is a cunt." Doom, doom, doom. And Gene Kelly just went, "Well, Frank, that's not how you're going to do it, is it?" He said, "No, that's it."
Oh.
Yeah. You know, I thought comeback, you know, but yeah, so that's what he did. And
Frank could be a little vulgar.
Well, ask me a pharaoh. You know?
Yeah. I like this story, too. This and Gilbert will also appreciate this one, which is the... by the way, Sandy knew Pat McCormick, but we'll talk about that. We'll save that. Sandy and I worked on a project with Pat McCormick, which you didn't know about me.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, but he also knew Jack Riley.
Jack Riley.
Who's come up on this show a bunch.
Yes.
He introduced me to Mel Brooks.
Oh.
Actually, he didn't. He set me up. He came to see the Groundlings, and he lived down the street from us, and... He said to me after the show, he said, "Would you like to meet Mel Brooks?" I said, no, I think I'm going to the dentist. I thought he was kidding. He said, "No, I'll really set up a meeting. I think you're funny. Mel will like you." And so I go in to meet, and again, it was like Groucho, another icon. And his office is like the size of Madison Square Garden. I go in the door, takes me 10 minutes to walk from the door to his desk, and I'm walking, and I'm walking, and I'm sweating, and Mel's just sitting there. He's watching me. He's watching me. And I finally get there, and he says, took you long enough. Sit down. And he, so we start to talk, and I made him laugh. And I got up. I said, I'm going to go. He said, where are you going? Why are you going? I said, I made Mel Brooks laugh. I'm going to quit show
business. That's it.
I'm going to quit show business. That's what I have, a picture of me and Groucho. And so he sits me down and we talk and he says, you know, I like you. I was going to give you a small part, but now I'm going to give you a bigger small part. And so...
Was the first one High Anxiety?
High Anxiety. And I had the scene with him and Madeline Kahn, who was great, you know. And then I never had to audition. He would just call me. And for the second one was what?
History of the World.
History of the World. So I come in, and I'm going to play Einstein. And they do a 2.5-hour makeup on me and mustache. And I had to sing. And I don't sing at all. At all. I can't even say a song title in tune. So they're having me sing. And Mel was playing Hitler, and this other guy was playing Freud. And the scene was ice skating. We were going to ice skate. And so I come in, and I'm going to sing the song, and the musical conductor, John Morris, is singing in my ear, and I'm still singing. Also, Jackie Mason was there to sing.
Oh, my God.
He was there to sing. His song was, I'm sitting flicking chickens, and I'm going through the pickings. All of a sudden, the goys back down the walls. And he did. He sang worse than I did.
Unbelievable.
And so...
But Einstein didn't make the cut.
No. Yeah. So he cut the whole skating thing, so he calls me again. He says, I want you to do The Last Supper. And that was with John Hurt.
Yes,
played
Jesus. Sure.
And I was the apostle, the first one when he comes in, Mel. And Art Metrano was in that
scene. Oh,
we
had Art here. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
How was he
Art was Da Vinci.
Yes, he did The Last
Supper. Painting The Last Supper.
And my pictures, and
yes,
you know.
Yes.
I show that to my kids. They don't know Jesus. They don't know The Last Supper, you know.
And, they don't know Art Metrano.
They don't know John Hurt. So, you know, we did it, and it was a lot of fun. Then afterwards, we go back to the dressing room, and John Hurt is just like a wooden curtain between his dressing room and mine. And he taps on the thing, and I say, yes. He says, hey, would you care to come over and have a drink? I said, sure. And I opened the curtain, and like an avalanche of empty booze bottles. See, we have this connection with booze. I'm not an alcoholic.
I know, but...
But I was ankle deep in empty booze bottles.
Almost every story we talked about on the phone involves some form of
abuse.
Of abuse.
Yes.
Of self-abuse.
And we sat there till like midnight, till the security threw us out and drank. And again...
Almost British actors.
To me, it's like, oh, I'm sitting here with John Hurt, you know, and we're both drunk, and they're throwing us out of Fox.
Getting blotto with Jesus.
Yes.
Speaking of Brits, tell Gilbert the Ringo story, because that one's also fun.
And then the Laurence Olivier, which I didn't tell you the tail end of that.
Tell me.
My wife cast this movie, The Jazz Singer, with Neil Diamond.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Gilbert does a bit about it. Lucy Arnaz.
Lucy Arnaz.
And Laurence Olivier
as the father.
Who has the classic line, I huff no son.
Very good.
That is very good. So he brings not an acting coach, but a woman to help him run his lines. And so my wife and I go to the hotel. And we're sitting with that woman talking, and out of the bar comes Hume Cronin, William Holden, and Laurence Olivier.
Man.
Shit-faced. I mean, shit-faced. They're like weaving, walking behind each other, weaving. And I'm just, I can't believe it, you know. As William Holden walked by, I said, watch your head. Don't fall down. Oh, I'm sorry.
You kid.
I kid. So anyway, a tradition in the movies is the casting director calls the actors for their first call. My wife had to call Laurence Olivier. I'm on the phone upstairs. And she calls him. He goes, hello. And he was staying at a hotel. She says, what do I call you? Lord Olivier? Mr. Olivier? She just called me Larry. And I thought, she's not going to call him Larry. She says, well, Larry, I have your call here. It's 8:30 a.m., stage 4, scenes 10 through 12. He says, okay, what soundstage? She says, 12. What studio? Goldwyn. What scenes? This went on for 15 minutes. What soundstage? 12.
Oh, my God.
And my wife said, I'll make sure the AD, and the woman drove him back and forth, but he just... what scenes?
Okay. What movie?
Yes. Is this where I do the soliloquy? You know, you're not my son. Oh, I remember the way he said that line. I don't have... He was amazing just to watch. But he was doing it for the money.
Yeah,
he
did. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You think he needs to work
He made a bunch of those for the
Neil
money.
Diamond and Lucy
Arnaz. And Sean he did for the money.
Oh,
and
what
Betsy.
Did, oh, the one they Ray Harryhausen... Ooh.
The Clash of the Titans.
Yes.
Right, with,
yes.
What was his name? Harry Hamlin.
Harry Hamlin. He's cashing a lot of checks then, Sir
yeah.
Larry.
Well, he had, walking around the toga.
Right. Well, he yeah. had kids now, even yeah. though he was 87. He finally had kids, and he needed... You don't make a lot in the theater.
Absolutely.
You know?
But either tell Gil, and they're both fun, the Ringo story... But you got to tell him the Jerry Van Dyke story.
I'll tell him.
That may be my favorite.
And the Lucille Ball story.
And we'll get to that one.
So... Which story was I going to tell you now?
Well, I think, I blank think Gilbert
oh,
will
Ringo,
appreciate
Ringo.
The Ringo
yes.
one.
Well, as a kid growing up, I had a huge nose. And I had it fixed, but it did grow back. But as I'm being wheeled into the surgery, the nurse says, why are you getting your nose fixed? You look like Ringo Starr. And I thought, oh, God, you know. Jump ahead, 1979, I had a half-hour show on CBS as an actor. And so Cher and this other woman every Tuesday would rent out a giant roller rink, and it was for celebrities, De Niro, Mick Jagger. And because I had a show on, I went. And so, and I'm looking, there's, oh my God, a Ringo Starr, you know, and every week he was there, and every week he was drunk. So I'm sitting there, I'm taking my skates off, and I look up, and Ringo's looking at me, and he's walking towards me, and he sits down right next to me and puts his arm around me and says, you know, I'm a big fan of yours. I thought, the show hasn't even been on yet. How could he be a big fan? He says, I listened to all of your songs. I don't sound like Ringo. That's
all right. It's close enough.
It's more like Ringo after he lived in Israel.
It's like one of them. It's like the actor from the Bad Beatles cartoon. playing
yes, right.
But it's pretty good.
So he says to me, yes, I like some of your songs. I said, I said, I know who you think I am. He said, aren't you Stephen Bishop? I said, no, I'm not Stephen Bishop.
God.
And he was so disappointed. He said, really? He said, you should tell them you're Stephen Bishop because you get lots of free things. And so he was schwitzing, and he smelled from booze. I took my handkerchief out, and I gave it to him, and he wiped himself down, gave me back the handkerchief, and I have it sealed in a plastic bag. And we may take some DNA out of there.
Get that one up on eBay.
Yeah, yes, I wish I, you know.
More drunkenness.
Yes, Ringo will get much less money than Paul. But anyway, that's the way it worked out.
Yeah. The Jerry Van Dyke story also struck me.
This is every actor's nightmare. Well, it was like when I, just did the pilot for Love Boat, but didn't come back and do the series. So Jerry Van Dyke, his friend was Sheldon Bull, which is a writer. He wrote the old Bob Newhart show and created. So he created the Newhart show, and he calls Jerry, says, I wrote a pardon for you. It's yours. You don't have to audition. It's yours.
The innkeeper.
Yes,
the innkeeper.
Tom Poston.
Yeah,
so he says, okay. He calls him a week later. He says, you know, CBS just wants you to come in just to meet. And Jerry Van Dyke is, no, I hate those meetings. They never liked me. He says, you don't have to read. Just come in, meet the CBS people, say hello, and that's it. He goes in, he meets them, he leaves. That night, Sheldon Bull calls him and says, I'm sorry, Jerry. You know, Bob wants Tom Poston. And Jerry Van Dyke goes berserk. I mean, crazy. He says, I knew I shouldn't have gone in. And so he goes furniture shopping with his wife after this. and he's out of his mind. They go into this antique furniture store on Ventura Boulevard. In walk two guys with guns, and they're going to rob the furniture store of the cash because it was high-end stuff. And they yell, "Everyone on the floor! Everyone down!" And Jerry Van Dyke says, "I'm not getting on the floor. Go ahead, shoot me. I lost a series. They recast me." And the gunmen start to back out, and he's following. "Go ahead." And they run down the street, and he says, "Please kill me. I don't want to live anymore." And then finally, Sheldon Bull put him in coach. That was also his show.
Isn't that great?
But, you know, there's so many people. You know, there were like 10 guys who were going to play a part in Jerry Seinfeld, the Jason.
The George Costanza part.
I think Paul Schaefer.
Paul Schaefer.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
But all these actors, they all, "I have it, and I didn't have it." You know?
You got to work for Mel Brooks. Gilbert didn't even make it because they replaced him with who?
Oh, yeah. I auditioned for Life Stinks.
Uh-huh.
And so did
the movie.
Yeah. And I got, of course, the classic Hollywood thing. You're who we want.
Right.
You're it.
Right.
And then it turns out I didn't get it. And I said, "Well, who did they get?" "Billy Barty."
Billy Barty. Oh, my God.
I lost out to a famous midget.
This is a Billy Barty story.
Fire away.
In the Groundlings, I did this character named Jackie Moldave, and he was like Jerry Lewis. You know, I wore a tuxedo and a cigarette and brought people up on stage and insulted them. And so they were doing a benefit at the Santa Monica Civic for animals, you know, Betty White's thing. Mm-hmm. And they told me Billy Barty was going to do the show. I said, okay. So I'm out there doing some shtick, and out of nowhere, Billy Barty comes running out on stage. And he says, "That's enough. Get off there. Come on." But he's kidding. And I say, "No, get out of here." He throws himself on the floor, grabs me by the knees, throws me down on the floor. And the two of us are rolling around. And I'm in a tuxedo. We're rolling around on the floor. And this was unrehearsed, you know. And I don't know. Then we both got up, and I picked him up, and I thanked, you know, did the old thank you for the award.
right.
But there aren't a lot of people that I know that have ever wrestled with Billy Barty.
Actual midget wrestling.
Yeah, and he was a strong little guy, you know. He'd grab you by the nuts, and he would not let go, because that's about...
Did you ever actually meet him, Gilbert?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
Never.
he just says
you look
out.
Disgusted.
I could have gotten into a fight with him.
Yeah, that's the easy part, you know. But
according to that Peter Dinklage movie.
Oh, right.
Billy Barty punched out. Herve
Villachez.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Oh.
Good Lord. Well, tell us about meeting Groucho and the infamous Aaron Fleming.
Okay. So, first, I went to see that concert at Carnegie Hall.
We just had Dick Cavett here.
Yeah, and it was heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was an intermission that was like a half hour long, and then...
So you were both there as kids.
Yeah. You were there?
Yes.
He was there too.
Oh, yes.
I didn't know.
You didn't say hello to him.
That's funny. I don't remember seeing you there. So the lights come up, and he's standing there on stage, Groucho, and there was a guy lying on the floor running a mic cable up his pant leg, you know, and this is in front of the audience. And so then when I went to L.A., I got into a workshop at 20th Century Fox, and Aaron Fleming was in the class. It was an improvisational workshop, and I didn't know who she was, and she would come, and she was sort of attractive, and then one night she shows up to class with Groucho. This is in a workshop, and he comes in. It took him 20 minutes to get from the door to the seat, but the way you did it. So the teacher says, "I don't know, do you want to work?" He says, "I'll only work with the girls. I don't want to work with any men." She says, "Go ahead." And he gets up on stage, and there's a table and a chair, and he sits there. He says, "Okay, I'm a Hollywood producer, and you're coming in to audition for a movie." And so the first girl gets up, and she's talking to him, and he takes his pencil and throws it across the stage. He says, look, sweetheart, would you get that for me? And she bends over, and that's what he wanted to do, is look at the ass. He had every girl come up on stage. He'd throw the pen. They'd bend over, and he'd say, thank you, we'll call you next. And that was the entire...
Groucho's dirty old man.
That was
face.
The entire class. And then I met him, and I had my picture taken with him somewhere in storage. I was in this movie. Sheila Levine is dead and living in New York.
You know that picture, Gil?
Yes. And so she brings Groucho to the set. And again, the first thing I did was get him and Groucho in the headlock and have pictures taken of me. I figured if he doesn't survive the headlock, I got the pictures.
Sure.
So I say, I can't, you know, I saw you at Carnegie Hall. And he did that line. He looked at me, squinted. He said, funny, I don't remember seeing you there. I was thrilled.
That's great.
You know,
great.
He did. And then a friend of mine had the poster. And this rock and roll guy, they had named an album, two albums, one A Night at the Opera and the other one A Day at the Races.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Nice segue.
Yes. You know, well, he gave me the poster off his wall for the Groucho Carnegie Hall poster.
Well, since you became friendly with the members of Queen.
Yes.
And I think, and this is the only podcast in the world where the name midget, the word midget is acceptable.
I won't allow any other word.
But Sandy mentioned something to me about lavish Queen parties. You want to take it from there?
Yeah, they one of them, the drummer for Queen, moved in next door to me. Roger Taylor, and we've been friends for like 40 years. And the debauchery that would go on with these guys, the parties they had, you know. So they had a birthday party for Freddie. It was so, I don't know if there is a word, debauched. He didn't want me to come. He was embarrassed. I said, it's okay. It was drugs and booze and drugs and booze. They had midgets with silver trays of cocaine on their heads.
Jeez.
With a little
wrong.
With a little chin strap so it didn't fall off. And they would walk around, and they just, you know, wore a thong or something.
Hang on a minute. Midgets in thongs with bowls full of coke, with coke, and chin strapped to their heads.
Right.
This is like out of Caligula.
It was?
Yeah.
And they would walk around, over here. And, and you'd see the midgets going back into the kitchen with an empty platter, and they'd come out with another pile of cocaine on their head.
Another gig you lost to Billy Barty.
Yes.
Imagine who you might have met at that party.
Wow.
I thought you'd appreciate that. I wrote down midgets with coke on their heads. On this card.
I mean,
I know what pleases my co-host.
They talked about that on 60 Minutes. Midgets with coke on their heads.
Coke on the heads. They left it out of the movie. They should have put that in the movie, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody. But they were just. And just, you know.
You got to write a book with some of these stories and the stuff you were telling me on the phone.
So one time, quickly, my friend Roger, they're doing a show in San Francisco at the Cow Palace. So he flies in a private jet, me, my wife, and his wife, who live next door to us, up to San Francisco. And we see the concert, and it's unbelievable. It's amazing. And we go down, my wife and I, and Roger and his wife, and we get into his limo. And the garage door opens, and it comes up from underground, and out of nowhere, girls are jumping out of the bushes onto the limo, and they're on the roof, and they're on the hood, and the driver looks around and says, what should I do? And Roger says, if you drive fast enough, they'll fall off. One of them hung on to the 405 until we were lost in town.
That happens to you, Gil.
Yeah. Right? And you just would see them fall off the top and peel off the hood. And
women leap onto your Uber, Gilbert, when you're doing a gig in Cincinnati?
Yeah, when I'm doing giggles.
You have been an eyewitness to a lot of very strange
behavior.
Well, yes. I mean, and as I said, debauchery is a good word because it's a recurring theme.
Yes, yes.
With these people.
Well, the debauchery, I told you the thing with Mick Jagger at the roller skating.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Oh. Mick Jagger went to the roller skating,
yes,
too. And so I go into the bathroom and I go into a thing. I close, lock it because I like to, my privacy.
Yeah.
And I hear someone else come in and I'm looking through the thing and it's Mick Jagger and two other guys. And I'm in the toilet with the door locked, trapped. He takes out a bottle this big with cocaine and he doesn't let them. He anoints them like this.
Oh, jeez.
And the coke is flying around the room, and they're just doing it and doing it. And I thought, I got to get out of here. So I've been in there 15 minutes. They don't know I'm in there. So suddenly I throw open the door, and as cool as I thought I was, I looked like a narc next to these guys. And I walk out, and I'm like ankle deep in coke. And I wanted to show them how cool I was. I open my pocket and I take out this tiny little bottle. And they're looking at me like, you know, and I thought, fuck this. And I put it back in my pocket and scoop up some, and that was it. But every week, there were just amazing people at that.
Incredible days of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Days gone by. Those days are not around anymore.
No, and a lot of those people are not around
that kind
anymore
of drug abuse.
Either.
Yeah. Take us out on the, and you know, we'll have you back another time, Sandy, and cover things that we haven't covered, because there's a lot more stuff. But I do know that Gilbert's going to appreciate the Lucille Ball stuff.
I figured that.
Oh, yeah, so, I like it already.
All right. So
no midgets full of coke.
No. My wife cast the jazz singer.
Yes.
And, you know, they had so many. At one point, Barry Manilow was going to do it.
Yeah,
and
sounds
then,
right.
Yeah, and then they thought, so who are they going to get as the other leading man? So they wound up hiring Neil. And after seeing dozens of women, the director he wanted Lucy Arnaz. And we became friends, you know. And so Lucy goes back to New York, and we don't see her for a while. My wife and I are having a baby, and we're at Cedars, and my wife just gave birth, and we're in the recovery room, and there's a curtain. We hear on the other side a voice that sounds familiar, and I take a peek in the curtain. It's Lucy Arnaz. She's laying on the bed in the recovery room next to us, and I pull open the curtain. We say, what are you doing here? What are you doing? She said, she just had a baby 2 hours ago, and we said, well, we just had a baby, a boy. We say, what's your baby's name? She says, Simon. What is your baby's name? Simon. And for 5 years, I used to have Simon and Simon parties. And when she'd come to L.A., she'd stay with her mother. She'd call us, invite us over to swim. And the first time we went up to the front door, knocked on the... I mean, her house was completely open from the street. You could see the house. And Lucille Ball opens the door. And we're just all standing there looking at her. I mean, our kid didn't know who she was. She invites us in. All the curtains are closed. It's dark. Not as dark as Broderick Crawford's room, but it's pretty dark, you know. Shag carpeting, and she's playing, I forgot the game with a guy.
Backgammon,
yes. Yeah. She's playing backgammon, and, you know, we're out in the back swimming and doing this stuff. And so now we're going to leave. And we came in the front door, and we start to go out the back door. She says, Lucille Ball says, no, no, you have to go out the same door you came in. And this is a thing she had. And so we had to go around and go out the back door. So then, so after we had the baby, there's a knock at the door in the hospital room. I say, come in, and it's Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz.
Oh.
And I'm this guy from Ohio. And the two of them, I thought, we brought them back together? You know, and they came into the room, and she says, I want to see this other Simon. And she looks at our baby, and we talk to them, and my ears are ringing. I can't believe Lucille Ball is here. So at one of the swim parties, I didn't swim. I sat in the living room in the dark with Gary Morton. And, you know, he was her.
Sure, yeah.
So he's just wearing a terry cloth bathrobe, nothing else.
Oh.
And he's sitting there with his legs spread, and I'm looking, you don't, and it looked like, I mean, his schlong, it looked like a dead cobra. laying on the floor. I swear, his schlong just sort of made a circle back up to his groin area. And, you know, and he's talking to me, and he's leaning, he's got his legs spread. I don't know where to look. I keep looking. Oh. And then as I left, I said, now I know why Lucy.
Showbiz.
Showbiz story, yeah.
Yep. Here's Lucy and here's Gary.
Yeah, here's Gary. And here's the snake.
We got to wrap, Sandy. I'm sorry because I got to get these people out of here.
I understand.
But we will do another one.
Yeah, we need to
do. We know where to find you. You can do it. You can come on Skype.
You know, we left out all the really funny Holocaust material.
No, yeah.
No, my parents were Holocaust survivors.
Yeah, I told Gilbert. You'll come and tell us about
that. I'm laughing already.
Next time.
It's a million, it's 6 million laughs, let me tell you. But you know.
And
you know.
Gary Morton showed up.
That's
it,
right.
It puts the hot in Holocaust.
You're in LA. You'll go to the studio. We'll get you on Skype and we'll do another one.
It sounds good.
Okay, buddy.
I enjoy this. Thank you so much.
Gilbert and Frank's amazing colossal obsessions, and we've been talking to the man who lost the Sidney Bernstein pardon. And I wound up the Jew doing it in Beverly Hills Cop 2, but he did get to a party with midgets in thongs with coke on their heads.
And I got to see Gary Morton's schlong.
Yes.
That's more than I've done. Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.